Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, President Trump lashes out. Democrats call for investigations and a big dam catastrophe averted for now in California. In a fiery press conference yesterday, President Trump defended his first 4 weeks, said everything's running fine.
I turn on the TV, open the newspapers, and I see stories of chaos. Chaos. Yet it is the exact opposite. This administration is running like a fine-tuned machine.
On Wednesday, Democrats stepped up calls for a congressional investigation into President Trump's Russia ties. Here's House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
So my question to my Republican colleagues is, if you're not willing to take the first step to look into this, what are you afraid of?
And 200,000 residents were evacuated in Northern California this week over fears the Oroville Dam could fail.
I just got a text message and an alert just saying get out as fast as you can. And there's fire trucks that are going up and down our street saying evacuate.
This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Stephen Henderson, Molly Ball, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What did you hear in President Trump's press conference yesterday? What's your take on the administration's relationship with Russia? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We are broadcasting today from Detroit and the studios of Detroit's public radio station WDET. We're in Detroit as part of On Point's year-long national listening tour after the 2016 election. We want to thank all the WDET listeners we met last night, our warm welcome from people all over Detroit, and WDET for hosting us in its studios right here today. Joining me now here in Detroit is Stephen Henderson, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial page editor of the Detroit Free Press, host of WDET's Detroit Today, and the podcast Created Equal. Stephen Henderson, welcome back. Great to have you right here.
Absolutely. Good to see you.
With us from Washington is Molly Ball, national political reporter for The Atlantic. Molly, wonderful to have you with us.
Great to be here. Hi, Tom. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. Hi. Hello. And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty. Jack, hello from Detroit.
Hello, Tom, Stephen, and Molly.
Okay, can we jump right into yesterday? There was a lot of news this week. Who knew? Late word yesterday morning that the president wanted to talk to the press, and then he did, and it was something unusual. Molly Ball, you were watching what unfolded in this press conference yesterday, and I hate to go first to the president and the press, and yet it was such an extraordinary encounter. Lots of issues touched on, and we'll look at them as well. What did you see yesterday, Molly?
A lot of things. It was an extraordinarily long press conference, ostensibly called so that President Trump could announce his replacement at the Department of Labor for the nominee who withdrew, Andrew Puzder, who had a number of issues and who Republicans in the Senate finally decided they could no longer support. The announcement itself has not seemed to be particularly controversial, but Trump moved on, as he tends to do. And I think what we saw, I mean, Trump is certainly not a person who has much of a poker face. And when he has something that he wants to discuss or if he's frustrated or annoyed, that tends to come out. And so we saw a president really in a remarkably unusual way unleashing on his critics, unleashing on the press, attacking the reporters who were there to ask him questions, telling falsehoods about various things, some of them fact-checked in the moment by reporters who sort of couldn't believe that what they were hearing. And so I think we really got a glimpse into the mind of this president who realizes on some level that a lot of things are going wrong for his White House and would like to correct those perceptions. I don't know if this press conference went anywhere toward changing the perception of chaos. I mean, you can stand there and say there is no chaos here, but when you're giving a rambling, more than an hour press conference that itself is very chaotic, I don't know if that perception changes very much.
He went after leaks and leakers. He went after critics. He went after very strongly the press itself there in large numbers. Here was the president in the briefing East Room yesterday.
The press has become so dishonest that if we don't talk about it, we are doing a tremendous disservice to the American people. Tremendous disservice. We have to talk about it to find out what's going on, because the press honestly is out of control. The level of dishonesty is out of control.
Stephen Henderson, you were here in Detroit watching. You've seen this, like many of us now, from afar, not there in the room. And nevertheless, it was hard not to be gripped by this exchange between the American press and the American president. What did you see yesterday?
Well, I saw a couple of things that gave me great pause. One of them, I think if you look at the characteristics that this president sort of exhibited yesterday, the paranoia, the belligerence, the lack of focus. I mean, I don't know that he completed a single thought during that press conference. I mean, these are the signs of somebody who's deeply troubled. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of sort of joking about what his mental state might be. But I think there's a very serious inquiry that needs to be made about how stable a personality this is that we're dealing with. The other thing that I noticed yesterday that I think we absolutely ought to talk about is the way he treated both the Jewish reporter who asked a question mm-hmm. and the African-American reporter mm-hmm. who asked a question. The things he said to them were wildly inappropriate, but the way he related to them, the way he dismissed the Jewish reporter after he asked his question.
And, who stood up and said, I'm not charging any anti-Semitism, but there right. are anti-Semitic incidents going on around the country, and right. how or will your administration respond to them? Trump took it personally, though it wasn't a personal
attack. It was not a personal attack, and that's what I'm talking about with the paranoia. Anything, he perceives everything as an attack on him, a personal attack, and he turned it back on the reporter, with the African-American reporter.
April Ryan.
Saying, you know,
when are you going to talk with the
are these friends of yours mm-hmm. About the Congressional Black Caucus? It's mm-hmm. just a bizarre behavior.
He turned back and said, are they friends of yours? She asked him, right. when will you meet with them or how will you meet with them? He said, well, are they friends of
are
yours?
Are they friends of yours? What would that mean?
As if, well, because right. she's black?
Yeah. I mean, it was a very strange exchange, and again, the signal here is towards somebody who is not a stable person, not a stable personality, someone who cannot deal with reality and respond to it, is living in a world that the rest of us don't understand.
Jack Meaty, we've got to be extremely careful here. This is the elected president of the United States. If he could hear what Stephen Henderson was saying right now, and Steve is not the only one by any means, he might well say, yes, I'm deeply troubled. I was elected to come here with a big mandate of change. I'm trying to make it happen, and I'm getting all this pushback from the press, from the bureaucracy in Washington. It doesn't seem fair to me. Yes, I'm deeply troubled because I'm having trouble implementing what I came here to do. He might say that, Jack.
He might, and in which case he would essentially be laying down one of the interpretations of yesterday, which is a political interpretation. You know, President Eisenhower, in a famous press conference, his press secretary Jim Haggerty said to him, "Mr. President, you can't go out there. The press will ask you tough questions. It'll embarrass us." He said, "Don't worry, Jim. I'll go out and confuse the boys." He did. He went out and confused them with fractured syntax, and so everyone was talking about trying to figure out what the president meant, and the issue, which I forget what it was, went away. Well, maybe this was an effort to get us off the scent of Russia and Putin and all the rest and talk about the kinds of things that Stephen was outlining. Let's allow that as a possibility. But there's another one, and that's the one that Stephen raises, and it was raised in a tweet to John King from a Republican senator who tweeted him yesterday, "This should have been done in front of a therapist, not a national TV audience." And Trump there, I mean, that's the Trump that we have seen displaying, quote, grandiosity, impulsivity, hypersensitivity to slights or criticism, and an apparent inability to distinguish between fantasy and reality. That's quoting from a letter from three prominent psychiatrists drawing attention to Trump's narcissism. And then you could look with E.J. Dionne. He dismisses that psychological stuff and says what we have here instead is someone who's unfit to serve. Admit it. What you see there was, what you saw yesterday was deceit, incompetence, and moral indifference. Moral indifference in the question about the anti-Semitism.
Molly, what does the country do with this? I mean, not everyone is going to interpret it this way. Donald Trump is not very different in the Oval Office than he was on the campaign trail, and he was elected off the campaign trail, democratically elected under our system by the voters of this country.
And they presumably wanted change from him, the change he says he's trying to execute right now.
Yes, I have not forgotten about the presidential campaign because Donald Trump keeps bringing it up over and over and over again.
Yes.
He's obsessed with it. He's fixated on his win. And I think it's something that we know, and I've certainly come to understand about his worldview, that everything for him is about winning and losing. And are you winning? And if you're not winning, you're losing. And it's a personal investment by him. So, you know, fairness, unfairness is not something he sees as a disinterested observer assessing the facts neutrally. It's what's good for him versus what's bad for him, and that's the lens through which he sees everything. I will say that I think, you know, all of the tut-tutting about rules and decorums and norms and presidents aren't supposed to act that way, that to me seems like somewhat of a sideshow as opposed to the actual effects of this presidency. And what we're actually seeing is a president who's having a hard time getting anything done. Now, it's only been a few weeks, but, you know, we saw a cabinet nominee have to drop out this week. We saw the national security advisor resign in very complicated circumstances, and the president potentially at war with his own intelligence community and continuing mystery surrounding Russia. We have a Congress that feels it's receiving no direction from Donald Trump. You know, consolidated Republican dominance in Washington ought to have meant that they could move forward very quickly on a number of legislative priorities. And instead, they are mired in turmoil on everything from Obamacare to tax reform and everything else, in part because the White House is not giving them meaningful leadership. So I think that is the real story here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news this hour from Detroit, Michigan, where we are on our national On Point listening tour. This week, President Trump lets loose Mike Flynn out as national security advisor. A potential successor to Mike Flynn says no thanks. The labor nominee, Posner, drops out. Immigrants stage a day of no-show at workplaces and a California dam, tallest in the nation, on the brink this week. Stephen Henderson is here with me in Detroit. He is the editor of the editorial page of the Detroit Free Press, host of WDET's Detroit Today, with me right here in the studios of WDET. Molly Ball is with us from Washington, politics writer for The Atlantic. Jack Beatty is with us, and you can join us. What did you see in that press conference? Legitimate gripes from the president or a leader struggling? What is the real problem here? Leaks, facts, fake news, reality? Are you glad Mike Flynn is gone? Do we have the whole story there? And what does it say when Vice Admiral Harward doesn't want the job, doesn't want to serve in this administration? We've got a lot to look at, but a lot of callers as well. And right here from Detroit, Terry in Detroit, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Welcome to Detroit.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here. We've had a great time. Detroiters have really rolled out the carpet for us.
Yes, wonderful. A couple of quick points. That news conference was astonishing yesterday. My kids won't watch the president on TV any longer. My 12-year-old self-selected out of politics or watching his politics this past summer because she says he always says inappropriate things when he's talking. So even a 12-year-old recognizes that the man can be very inappropriate.
Terry, half the country in electoral votes, you know, basically half the country voted for him. More popular votes for Hillary, but he won the Electoral College. That's a lot of American votes who went his way. What does he deserve now in terms of our respect, our ear, our listening?
Well, you know, I believe you show respect and you get respect back. And he clearly didn't show respect to a lot of people in that room yesterday. I thought the way he handled the Jewish reporter was just incredibly inappropriate. It was an opportunity for him to stand up and say the kind of racism that we're seeing, the kind of events that have been happening the last several months need to stop. It was a great opportunity. He didn't take it. And then to treat a professional reporter like she was his personal secretary, it was a terrible display yesterday. Just
you're
terrible.
Talking about April Ryan from, is it Urban Radio, I think? They talked about it. Yeah, Terry, I appreciate your call from Detroit. Let me get one more right here. Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Peter, you're on the air. What are you thinking?
Hi, Tom. I got to say, I'm not so dismayed by this Congressional Black Caucus interchange with the reporter I actually think the press is being way too hard on him for that. And I want to say,
why?
I'm
why wasn't it weird? I mean, she's not in the Congress, in the caucus. She's just an African American reporter who asked him when he was going to meet with them, and he says, "Are they friends of yours? Are you going to set it up?" What's the? That's a purely racial kind of.
He also lied. He also lied and said that that he hadn't heard from them, and in fact, they had sent him a letter. They released it.
What are you thinking, Peter?
Okay, well, here's what I want to say about that. I actually think he was just being congenial with her. He was just saying, "Hey, you brought it up, so set it up. Let's do it."
You're super generous. You are very generous, Peter, and you're very, very generous. Who did you vote for, Donald Trump?
I did, but I want to say also, though, that I actually have buyer's remorse on that, but it's not for things like this. It's for his cabinet picks. I'm aghast by the people that he's been picking, especially Scott Pruitt.
For the head of the EPA. Why, Peter?
Well, because Scott Pruitt, what he did with this Oklahoma thing, I was watching the Rachel Maddow show yesterday, the death penalty thing with the trying to find drugs over the internet and lying about it. The thing about dumping coal waste into rivers, that's the kind of thing that shocks me, and that's what we need to be focusing on. The amount of lying and things like that, but not the petty stuff, okay? That's all I'm saying. And I'm a Trump voter from Iowa who does regret voting for Trump. That's all I'm going to say. Peter, thanks a lot.
We've got to appreciate your call. I guess what you consider petty depends on where you're sitting. If you're an African-American, watching the president address an African-American reporter in that way about a caucus that she is not part of, asking, are they your friends? You might see it differently, but we've got it loud and clear. We're going to devote a full hour on Monday to Scott Pruitt and the EPA and where that goes now. Issues here. Mike Flynn out this week. I mean, before the press conference yesterday, that was far and away the biggest story of the week. The president yesterday saying Mike Flynn was doing his job, and, you know, he didn't tell him to do what he did, but he would have because that was his job. Here he was.
Mike was doing his job. He was calling countries and his counterparts. So it certainly would have been okay with me if he did it. I would have directed him to do it if I thought he wasn't doing it. I didn't direct him, but I would have directed him because that's his job.
Molly Ball, can we look at why Mike Flynn is out right now? Did he do something illegal? Was it all and only about misrepresenting that conversation he had with the Russian ambassador in December during the transition period before inauguration? Was it just about misrepresenting that to VP Mike Pence? What's the deal here?
I would say that there's a lot of things here that we don't know still. There is still a lot of confusion surrounding this story. It does appear that Flynn had these conversations with Russian officials and sanctions were discussed. He then denied that sanctions were discussed, and someone leaked the transcripts of these calls, which were being monitored. And that was the point that the president was trying to make, is that it's inappropriate for these transcripts to be leaked. Nobody should be seeing those, and that should be the real scandal. However, there are a lot of potential issues with what happened with those calls and whether Flynn misrepresented it and whether he kept Vice President Pence in the loop and whether he misrepresented what was happening to the vice president, who then went out to the public and made a lot of claims, specifically claiming that sanctions were not discussed based on assurances, apparently, from Mike Flynn. That turned out not to be true. The vice president was embarrassed. The proximate cause of the firing or resignation, however you want to put it, appears to be the public revelation. This was known for quite some time to the White House, but it was when the stories came out in the press, again based on leaks, that it was no longer sustainable for Mike Flynn to continue to work there. He's a Trump loyalist. He was in the campaign. He's been an advisor to Trump. He's someone Trump likes personally and indeed continues to defend. Gave a fiery speech at the Republican convention, chanting "Lock her up" about Hillary Clinton. One of the things that interests me about this administration is what it takes for Trump to decide that somebody has to go, which seems to be very inconsistent. He values loyalty, but at some point he does cut people loose.
The president yesterday mainly fired up about the leaks that brought all this out into the public. He had known about it for some time before it was in the public eye. Here he was chastising, everybody. He's already chastised the intelligence community. We'll look at that. But here he was going after the press.
How does the press get this information that's classified? How do they do it? You know why? Because it's an illegal process, and the press should be ashamed of themselves. But more importantly, the people that gave out the information to the press should be ashamed of themselves. Really ashamed.
I mean, we've got all kinds of reaction to this. It just depends where you want to look. It is fascinating today. David Brooks at the New York Times, who used to be the House conservative there, still the House conservative, but not in Trump territory, writes today, "I have trouble seeing how the Trump administration survives a full term. Judging by his Thursday press conference, President Trump's mental state, he says, is now careening past unhinged, unmoored, and unglued." But he says he doesn't know how he would leave the office either. But it's not just at the New York Times. Here's Fox News anchor Shep Smith criticizing, this is Fox News, criticizing President Trump yesterday for not adequately responding to questions about the administration's ties to Russia in yesterday's press conference.
"Your opposition was hacked and the Russians were responsible for it, and your people were on the phone with Russia on the same day it was happening, and we're fools for asking the questions? No, sir. We are not fools for asking this question, and we demand to know the answer to this question. You owe this to the American people. Your supporters will support you either way. If your people were on the phone with her, what were they saying? We have a right to know."
That's Fox News. Shep Smith yesterday. We are in funny territory here. Lydia in Burnsville, North Carolina. Lydia, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for this program. I was horribly embarrassed on behalf of the United States by President Trump's disgusting behavior yesterday, especially his berating and railroading of the black reporter who he was so incredibly rude to. As far as I'm concerned, it insults all women and all black people. That's an awful lot of millions of people he's insulting. He just doesn't seem to know how to act like a decent person in any way, shape, or form. And I'm just absolutely horrified and outraged, and my blood pressure is up every day because I just cannot believe that this is going on. Not to mention, of course, putting Bannon on the National Security Council and these people called neo-reactionaries that he's also got working for him, apparently. So I'm incredibly alarmed, very, very upset.
Lydia, I appreciate your call. We had Elijah Cummings, Maryland congressman yesterday, Democrat on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. I was talking with NPR's Morning Edition actually today, saying that under President Trump, he said democracy is at stake.
"I believe that we are in a struggle for the soul of our democracy. I think President Trump has given all of us a wake-up call."
Steve Henderson, is that over the top?
I don't think it's over the top at all. I mean, I think, again, if you put all these things together, not just the behavior at the press conference, but the things that Molly was talking about, the things that are not working, the things that are signs that this administration has not even found its footing yet in Washington. I mean, people should be very, very concerned about what's coming next and whether this administration will ever be able to actually govern, which we haven't seen it do yet. I mean, I don't think there's anything at this point that's over the top in terms of what the response should be to this kind of signaling from the chief executive of the United States. I mean, again, it's all really mind-boggling. None of us, I think, has ever seen anything like this.
Molly Ball, on the Russia front, where does this go now? Jeff Sessions is now attorney general. What investigations, if any, are fully underway right now? What about Congress? Are there signs that they will actually engage with this? There's calls for an independent prosecutor. Is that likely? What do you see coming on the investigation side to try and trace down the threads here?
Well, there's been a somewhat limited willingness by the Republican Senate to investigate this. They are not convening a joint committee to investigate it, and the Intelligence Committee is supposed to be investigating. We have seen very aggressive words on this by Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham, who are determined to keep up the pressure despite the fact that the president is of their own party. But a lot of the Republicans in the Senate have seemed to want to downplay this. Democrats obviously very much want this to be investigated. They want a lot of things investigated. They are in the minority, and it is difficult for them to get that done. So, you know, one of the big things that I am watching about this administration is at what point is Trump believed as so politically weak that he damages his own party and other members of his party? We have not reached nearly that point yet. He's still very politically strong among the sort of base for Republicans, and I think that has contributed to their unwillingness to turn on him, at least to this point, even though personally many of them do have qualms.
We're going to be looking at Trump's strength, political strength, with that base also here on Monday. Speaker Paul Ryan maybe had that in mind this week. His weekly press briefing yesterday said that the amount of information being leaked, this is what he was focused on, being leaked from the White House and maybe beyond, was worrying.
What I do worry about, though, is if classified information is being leaked. That is criminal. And so I think there should be an investigation as to the leaks of information leaving wherever they're coming from. And if it's classified information, that is criminal, and there should be a criminal investigation of these leaks. That does compromise our national security.
Jack Beatty, the whole country, the whole world is watching this now. And, of course, we got more news all the time. This morning, the Associated Press is reporting, and the Trump administration is already not denying this, or an anonymous Trump administration senior official, but the AP is reporting that the administration is considering mobilizing as many as 100,000 National Guard troops to round up unauthorized immigrants. Senior Trump administration official now telling NBC News that that AP story is false, but somebody told AP that that's on the table here. I mean, it's just kind of jittery popping here, Jack.
It is, and conservative columnists have floated an idea that there's a kind of silent coup, I think was the phrase going on, that the intelligence services are striking back at Mr. Trump for his worse than insult to them. I mean, he likened them to Nazis. And now he's paying for it because they're not going to just sit still and let it happen. But there you have our intelligence sources at war with the president. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal reported that the intelligence services are they're rationing the information they give to Mr. Trump, partly to edit it to make it compensable for him, but partly out of a fear of what he's going to do with it. That's an extraordinary place to be. Molly talks about the effort at oversight. Well, you know, this Senate Intelligence Committee, as I read it at least, it's going to conduct its hearings in private, behind closed doors. It's not going to be the kind of public inquest that this crisis, that this issue of the Russian connection would seem to demand.
And Molly, meanwhile, what about national security? We had the impression that it might be David Petraeus who would come in and fill that position. Then it seemed more likely, quite likely, that it would be Vice Admiral Harward coming in there. Now he's saying he doesn't want the job. Why not, Molly?
Well, apparently he was disturbed by how chaotic this administration is, and he also was unable to receive assurances that he could put his own team in there and that the president's political staff, particularly Chief Strategist Steve Bannon, would not be in charge of or able to overrule him on national security. We have also seen the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, unable to bring in the team that he wants, unable to bring in a top deputy because of that person's opposition to Trump during the campaign, and Tillerson seeming to be left out of a lot of the foreign policy that's being conducted by the White House. You have multiple contentious phone calls between Trump and foreign leaders. I know that seems like a lifetime ago, but I believe it was last week that he, or maybe the week before, that he was apparently yelling at and hanging up on the Australian ambassador, one of our closest allies. So there's complete chaos on the foreign policy and national security front. And again, it's early days. It's only been a few weeks of this administration, although it feels like a few years. Things could stabilize. And I do think that something I've learned to appreciate about Trump in his campaign and in his business is that he has a higher tolerance for chaos than most people and feels that it is on some level productive. At this point, it doesn't look that way.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point from Detroit. In other news this week, on Monday night, before a crowd of hometown fans, the University of Connecticut women's basketball team notched its 100th consecutive victory over South Carolina. No other college team has ever had a streak like this.
The UConn Huskies have beaten South Carolina. UConn makes it 100 consecutive wins.
100. Incredible. Go, go. Cities across the country yesterday experienced a so-called day without immigrants to demonstrate how businesses and the economy would be hit. Washington restaurant owner Jose Andres explained why he took part.
It's more than 11 million undocumented. And they are saying, we are part of this, we want to belong, but you are not letting us. You are using us when you need us, and you are kicking us out when you don't.
And singer Adele swept the Grammys, winning in 5 major categories Sunday. But in accepting the Grammy for Album of the Year, she turned to Beyoncé.
I'm very humbled and I'm very grateful and gracious, but my artist of my life is Beyoncé in this album for me. The Lemonade album was just so monumental, Beyoncé. It was so monumental.
The emotion of a singer right there. We're looking at a week in the news. President Trump lets loose. Mike Flynn out. A successor says no thanks. Labor nominee Puzder drops out. Immigrants day state a day of no show. And that California dam, tallest in the country, on the brink for a while this week. We hope that's passed. 200,000 people evacuated. Kind of incredible. Most of them back in their homes now, but still question marks right there. You can join us this hour. What do you see in the president's performance, his performance this week in the press conference yesterday? What about national security, Russia, the U.S. and Israel? If you were at the Munich Security Conference right now, what would the U.S. look like to you? Would it look like a reassuring ally? Stephen Henderson is with us. Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial page editor, the Detroit Free Press, host of WDET's Detroit Today. He's here with me in Detroit, in the studios of WDET. Molly Ball is with us, national political writer for The Atlantic. Jack Beatty is here. Lots of people writing in online. Trump supporters writing in. Mark says this new resistance, and I guess that means critics of the president, will run out of energy. Cheap shot here. Most of them smoke too much pot. I don't know, Mark. Come on. Get up to date. Gregor says he may be living in his own world, but millions are right there with him, living right alongside him. And I think Gregor's is a supporter here. You be the judge. Scott writes, how the GOP can investigate email servers, I guess he means under Hillary Clinton, but will not lift a finger to investigate links between Trump and Russia, just sad. And Andrea writes, I think chaos is President Trump's normal. That's why things seem like a smooth run to him. Stephen Henderson, what about that interpretation of events? This is just the way Donald Trump rolls.
It may be, and maybe that works when you are the CEO of a private business and don't have anyone else to answer to. I think the problem and the difficulty that we're seeing is that the president of the United States is a unique position and requires something very different than what any of us perhaps have seen before. And the question is then, is Donald Trump up to the rigors and the demands of that position? And I think what he's showing now is that he's having a hard time making that translation. Now, if he turns it around and normalizes this and begins to govern in a way that makes some sense, God bless.
But what does that mean? It turns it around. I mean, he's not required to act just like Barack Obama. I mean, it was no drama Obama.
Right.
But now it's all drama Trump. Maybe that's his way. Or is that just not manageable?
But the real question is, again, you get back to the governing questions, right? You have an administration that in, 29, 30 days in office has shown all the signs of a dumpster fire. You've got a national security advisor having to resign.
Yep.
Out. You've got people who have been nominated for cabinet positions saying, I'm not even going to go through the process.
Because they didn't have Republican support.
Because they didn't have Republican support, right? You have other people that he wants to join the administration saying, I'm not comfortable with the circumstances. Again, it's the connection between the two. The erratic behavior, the bizarre behavior and the inability of this administration to get its footing and to actually govern that suggest this is a big problem and that it can't go on. I mean, at some point it will either have to normalize, or I believe that the Republican majority and the other branches of government will cut it loose.
A couple more callers here on this front. Austin in Nashville, Tennessee. Austin, thank you for calling us here in Detroit. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I just have one or two main points to chat about, and primarily in response to the press conference last night.
Okay.
So I am a Bernie supporter that voted for Hillary, but my father is very conservative, and he voted for Trump.
Right.
And we have attempted to remain civil throughout the entire, I guess, saga as it is now.
What did your dad think about the press conference yesterday, Austin? How did he feel about it? Was it okay by him?
He literally verbatim said it was wonderful. It was campaign-level Trump. It was just, you know, we're going to get him, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then I became a little bit less conversational and more pointed in my argument. Was like, but what are we going to do? What substance did he say beyond ridicule and belittle the reporters in the room? And then just not give way to any sort of plan. I have a bachelor's in Russian, East European, and Eurasian studies, and I definitely think we need to look into what the Russia connection was, and it is with the Trump presidency and his surrounding people. You know, and my dad, he knows my education, and he knows how passionate I am about it, and he was like, you really think that they did something? And I'm like, yes, Dad, there's proof now. I don't understand how... He, as an educated man that has, you know, lived through his life, just is not understanding proof anymore. And fact,
tension right there in the house in Nashville, and it sounds pretty tough. I mean, Jack Meadey, here in Austin's house in Nashville, between her and her dad, there's a tension you've got right here, around the country. Now, we heard Trump supporter in Iowa, disillusioned right now in some respects. We've got others writing to us. You know, here's a listener says, "I'm for a free press." But it was amusing to see them get schooled and called out on their lies as well, talking about the press conference yesterday. Now, that is ironic in some sense because the president dropped a number of whoppers in the press conference yesterday, including some that were just patently, baldly, totally wrong, saying he had the most electoral votes since Ronald Reagan, when in fact, hey, you name it, President Obama had more, Bill Clinton had more, George H.W. Bush had more. I mean, not even close to true, and he just shrugged it off when that was pointed out to him. So I don't know about lies, but there it was in the family in Nashville, and we've got this nationally, Jack. How do we work through the politics of this?
Well, divisions have rarely been this pointed. You know, you can almost, there was a letter to the editor of the newspaper up here, the Valley News, talking about a program we had run, Tom. I thought it was one of an exceptional program of Trump supporters, a round table. They were talking about why they supported Mr. Trump. This was during the, I think he had just been inaugurated.
Yes.
And this letter writer said she was frightened by what they were saying. She was frightened by what she thought was their cult-like adherence to Trump, their obliviousness to his obvious, as she saw it, failings, to his lies, which are simply on the record, and to his, just in general, his affect, his turbulent personality, and that disturbed that she used that phrase cult-like. Well, you know, he's at. He has spent the other day. Charles Blow had a chart that showed that I think Barack Obama had gone hundreds of days, perhaps it was 300 days, without going beneath 50%. Trump made it 8 days. He is not a popular president, and the feeling that some people are getting is as he continues his war on reality, denying obvious things in real time where he can be corrected. Will he finally get down to a kind of cult-like support? People who are just willing to say, I don't care what reality is, he's our guy, he can say anything he wants because he's expressing our inner frustration, and that's enough for us. Is that the direction of his political capital?
Though I can imagine listeners right now, Jack, saying, hey, Jack, who are you calling a cult? David in Charlotte, North Carolina. David, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hello? Yeah.
Hi, David. What do you think? What do you see?
I love the press conference. Conservatives have been watching the media set the narrative for decades. since the Reagan administration. We finally have a president that stands up there and calls you people out. The other is, during the election, everything Trump did was going to destroy him. The McCain thing, the Access Hollywood video, the cons, the women that came forward. Everything was the end of his campaign. And yet, you people were wrong. And you're wrong now because the people out here in the country are paying attention. And the other thing, there's a Rasmussen poll that came out getting 55% approval.
Yes.
The other is,
we saw that poll as well, David. But listen, Dave, I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. But I have to just tell you, as a fellow citizen, when you say you people to me, I don't relate to that. I do not relate. I'm not on some separate island from you. I hear you. I hear you as a fellow American. Why are you saying you people?
You people in the media, and I think I can say you people because that's who you are and that's who I'm not. The other Trump did sign legislation yesterday rolling back coal regulations. He had coal miners in his office, and if you saw the presser that he did at the end of it, he told the coal miners, hey, let's go into the office. Let's go take a tour of the Oval Office. And you could just look at him and say, oh, my God, this guy is, you know, he's a real person. And when you see that, you go, he's a real person. He doesn't talk like a politician, and it blows you guys' minds.
Hey, it doesn't blow my mind. I'm happy that he relates with those coal miners. I'm very happy about that. But we want to see effective government here. I don't feel separate from you, David, but you see it the way you will. Steve Henderson, there's a Trump supporter who said, you know, come on, he loved that press conference. There's another view of what's going on here, and you people, us, don't see it.
Well, I mean, this is an old saw of politics as well, which is that if you make an enemy of the press, a certain part of the public, that absolutely relates to that and will celebrate you for doing that. And this president, during his campaign, certainly made that one of the hallmarks. Again, the devil is in the details of what he actually gets done. Whether David in North Carolina in a year or 2 years feels like his life, his opportunities look different or better because Donald Trump is president. And that is the thing that I think he's going to have a much harder time delivering on and may not really intend to deliver on. Can he, you know, relaxing coal regulations to bring back temporary jobs that for the coal industry that is dying, not because of regulation, but because of moves away from that kind of energy, is a false prophet. It's an idea that seems great in the short term. In the long term, it will not pay off for us. It will not solve our problems. At some point, we need all Americans to start thinking about those issues in the long term, as opposed to, you know, short-term victories.
We were right here in Detroit last night talking to people deep in the Detroit and the industrial economy here about exactly this. Coal mines, lots of people coming up through Ohio and into Detroit from West Virginia, coal country. Mm-hmm. And they were saying something along these lines, you know, maybe a little temporary shot in the arm, but this is not the future, Mr. President. Molly, what about the reports this week that Trump campaign people were in touch with Russia during the campaign? How's that look at week's end? Does that have legs? Are we going to hear more about that?
I have no idea. Honestly, I can't make predictions about so many of these things because there are so many different threads coming out of this. There are so many different potential scandals coming out of this administration that I don't think we know where any of this is going. Now, I do think that that is a continuing story in the sense that from everything we know, the FBI is continuing to investigate that. So we certainly have seen a doggedness and an independence from the FBI Director James Comey, at least in the way that he pursued priorities that the previous administration might have preferred him not to pursue. So potentially, we will see that continue, but I don't think we know where any of this is going. And I think there are so many stories going on with regard to this administration that none of this has been resolved, and we have no idea where any of this is going to end up.
Vice President Mike Pence in Europe right now, Munich Security Conference, looking to reassure people there. Rex Tillerson has been in Europe. Secretary of Defense Mattis has been there saying, pay your way, but yes, you can count on us. Netanyahu in town this week with Trump. And here was President Trump at his side saying, well, maybe a two-state solution for Israel and the Palestinians, not necessary.
I'm looking at two state and one state, and I like the one that both parties like. I'm very happy with the one that both parties like. I can live with either one. I thought for a while the two state looked like it may be the easier of the two. But honestly, if Bibi and if the Palestinians, if Israel and the Palestinians are happy, I'm happy with the one they like the best.
Bibi, Prime Minister Netanyahu chuckling there in the background. Jack Beatty, this sounds casual, but it's a huge step away from what has been American policy for a long time. On the other hand, that policy has not brought the peace agreement.
That's right. Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador, said we are still for the two-state solution after Mr. Trump seemed to throw it into question. Roger Cohen, who's no fan of Mr. Trump, does say in today's New York Times, the two-state solution is a fossil. It's dead. It's a piety. It's something we say that's impossible, that isn't going to happen. And people are giving the Trump White House, or at least the State Department, credit for trying to form a kind of Arab-Sunni state coalition with Israel and to package that with some kind of Israel-Palestinian settlement. According to a poll yesterday in Israel, 55% of Israelis still favor a two-state solution, 44% of Palestinians. But when you package it with this, you know, larger geometry that the Trump administration is trying to work out, the support goes way up. So that's a hopeful note, I think.
One a hopeful note there to go out on, and we're very glad for it. Molly Ball, how many more weeks can you keep up this pace in Washington, this kind of a whirligig?
Oh, I've got to take a vacation, but fortunately, there are many, many more reporters here to keep an eye on things.
I'm not sure the president would share that sentiment about many, many more reporters after
yesterday.
He's
looking for friendly reporters.
Friendly reporters. It's hard to be friendly enough right there. Very grateful to all three of you for being with us in this hour. Molly Ball, national political reporter for The Atlantic, joining us from Washington today. Molly, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Jack Beatty, great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you.
And Stephen Henderson here at WDET and of the Detroit Free Press here in Detroit. We're on national listening tour. Stephen, it's always wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us
today.
Great
to have you here in Detroit.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.